because I could never get the traded Pokemon when I was younger because I didn't have any friends. So now I have the technology to trade to myself.
You didn't have any friends with link cables?
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant, clearly. That link cable was the blocker.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Secret Chocobo Club. My name is Paul. I play as Nonoan Kukuin, who is a male Hyor samurai, still samurai, eternally samurai. Although I am leveling other classes. I am trying to diversify.
Are you?
So that I don't get stuck in the duty queue forever, but I think I can comfortably and confidently say that I am still 100% a samurai main.
But you're a warrior main for Eureka.
I am a warrior main for Eureka, but that's more for efficiency's sake. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and I am James. I play as You'll Be Alright, who is a male Lalafell black mage.
Oh, black mage. Oh. Interesting. You needed the recent patch changes to fully embrace the black mage, huh?
Yes, I am a filthy casual, and the old Enochian uptime was too difficult for me. Now that they've babied down the class a little bit. Yeah.
Now it's your jam.
It is my jam. It's well, because the thing is, I did play Black Mage after, I think I finished all of the current content at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just had a blast. But then when I started to actually try and take it into more like harder content, playing dungeons as the old Black Mage was just rough. Because you're charging and you're casting flare or like, you know, whatever skill, and then everything just dies. And then you lose your buff, your attack doesn't go off.
So basically skill issue.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, my name is John. I'm playing as Nance Ingram, who is a male Viera Sage. Still going with Sage. Although I have been playing some other classes on other characters, and most recently I've been enjoying White Mage a lot. So I might actually try to level up White Mage on Nance as well.
Ooh.
You know, because I've noticed that you've been playing a lot of White Mage on your other characters. So I was actually going to ask about that. And if you've actually been listening a little bit, there is a fourth voice that has joined, returned, however you want to call it.
Reformed.
Reformed. Our friend Jacob is back. But in case this is someone's first episode listening, do you want to introduce yourself again?
I'm this party's tank. My name is Jacob. I play as Clayrich Baneswin, who is a male Hyor Highlander. I'm currently playing Dark Knight. I've kind of always been playing Dark Knight. Sometimes I'll like deviate and play other classes. Like I'm playing a little bit of Machinist to just get to max level.
Jacob, welcome back. And
thank you.
For our welcome other back. Listeners who have been following along with us, we, like last time, we just finished completing Bowl of Embers. We're back from all of that excursion. And so we'll be kind of picking up basically right afterwards. So, you know, you beat Ifrit, you get to, you know, you go through your cutscenes. We tack on one small W next to a whole pile of L's next to Thancred. And then we get yet another return to Waking Sands. And so we go back and we actually get introduced to a couple things all at once. And so I'll try to kind of like lay them out and then we can sort of take it from there.
Well, actually, I did want to point out one thing that happens before you go back. Because you go back to Camp Drybone and, you know, like, you talk to Thancred, and that's when he tells you, you know, go back to Waking Sands. But he's kind of congratulating you on the victory and stuff. But you look around, and there's all these dead bodies that have been, like, you know, laid out, and these NPCs that are crying next to them and stuff. And it's a very, like, interesting contrast between, you know, oh, like, you beat Ifrit. Wow, like, you're amazing from Thancred, and then all these dead people and crying people. And you can't, like, they're just in the background. So it's really easy to miss if you're just, like, rushing from quest to quest.
Yeah, I
missed actually
that.
I actually really liked that moment. It was a very like stark reminder or stark contrast and reminder of, you know, the price of victory or kind of just the lives that were lost and what just happened.
Yeah, and I think that also kind of stays thematically true, even from the first quest where you got to go and pick up the bodies and bury them. It does feel a bit like, oh yeah, we did it, but like you said, John, like the flip side is, well, but at what cost? Like, did we really win, or did we just win because the quest said we did? But yeah, those little details, I think they all kind of add up. Yeah, so you go back to Camp Dry Bones. Thancred tells you, hey, go back to the Waking Sands. And so you do. And in an actual bit of surprise, you've sort of returned back amazingly famous. So famous that the three grand companies have sent recruiters, headhunters, whatever you want to call them, right to the doorsteps of the Waking Sands.
Yeah.
And what I do appreciate is that the game does tell you why you're so famous is because our favorite slash non-favorite Tataru has been just blabbing, opening,
it's all her fault.
Opening her mouth, just yapping all about you to pretty much anyone that comes through to the Waking Sands. And so all three grand companies, that is the Immortal Flames from Uldah, the Maelstrom from Limsa Luminsa, and the Twin Adders from Gridania, they've all sent their own envoys to recruit you to join them.
That's just another plus one reason why Tataru is best girl. She's okay. Your biggest hype. Wait, hype cheerleader.
Hype cheerleader.
Hold on. I think it's almost amazing. Okay. It's just insane that this person just said these things. The news spread so fast that they were like, send envoys. Like, they were able to organize so quickly. This happens after like an hour, and then they're already there and they're like waiting for us.
It just speaks to how powerful Tataru is. The power of our receptionist. There is something that happens before that I wanted to bring up, because before your character gets back in the room with Mephilia, you see a conversation between Thancred and Mephilia where they're talking about what just happened, and Thancred is owning up to his many L's. Right, he's saying, "Oh, I should have been there earlier. You know, so and so could have died. Like, it's a miracle that things turned out as well as they did." And they're being very honest, which immediately stops right when your character enters the room. And then they kind of put on this face of like, "Wow, good job." And it's not that they're being insincere to you, but it's more like they're not really, you know, they're being that vulnerable with each other because they're closer. But then to your character, they're kind of just putting up like a brave face and like, "Wow, great job. Well done." And so it's a hint at like the deeper relationships that the Scions have that your character isn't necessarily a part of.
Mm.
And you see, you know, Thancred especially be more vulnerable rather than just kind of have that swagger and, you know,
like the facade. Nice,
like confident facade that he's been putting on for the most part.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. This is such a weird contrast to hear you guys like praise the writing of Realm Reborn, especially. I don't know about you, Paul, but when we started playing this game.
We love the game. Don't get us wrong. Just because we spent four episodes.
All we heard was AR is terrible. Just get on through it. Like, just truck through it as fast as possible.
I didn't say that.
It gets better.
I may have said that.
There is another person who was whip cracking at our backs.
I don't know who this person was.
I'd want to dunk on John, but I was right there with him.
I think it's more like ARR sucks, get through as fast as possible. I think that's like the easy soundbite headline kind of thing to say. I think, you know, we here at Secret Chocobo Club, we've kind of put our thoughts on our sleeve, so to speak. We're not huge fans of how A Realm Reborn is like structured story-wise, as well as some other things. But I don't think that's necessarily a controversial take. That being said, you know, just stopping there would also be doing a huge disservice to some good parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not a big fan. But does it have moments where it's actually kind of good and, you know, dare I say, fun and entertaining? Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's why we're here. We're here to call out all the goods and the bads. It just so happens that we're calling out a lot of bads.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, honestly, yeah, when I first started playing A Realm Reborn, there was just so much information and so much, like, information, exposition. Like, playing it a second time, knowing what happens, knowing the lore, knowing everything, it's actually a lot more enjoyable. I thought I would hate it, and I thought it would be unbearable, but I actually have been having a lot of fun just replaying MSQ from A Realm Reborn.
I do think there is an element of we can point these things out now because we've already played through everything, and we have the luxury to take a step back. John mentioned this in an early episode, but we trust the writing now. Like, we trust the game that it will deliver, and so, you know, we can actually take a step back and kind of enjoy the scenery a little bit without, you know, trying to understand the whole story without trying to, you know, juggle things like, do I need to care about this? Can I not care about this? Or is this mechanic important to me now? Or do I need to remember it later? Those kinds of thoughts all are like put aside, and we can focus more on, you know, the story itself, given that Final Fantasy XIV is a story-based MMORPG. So yeah. There is that too. So, you know, listener, if you're playing through for the first time, you know, and you're just kind of, you know, somehow you've heard of our podcast, you're listening and you're playing at the same time, you know, I was like, I would say it's more normal to not pick up on these things. I'd be surprised, pleasantly surprised, if you come to the same kind of analysis. So I will stress a lot of this is coming from a place of we've played it once already, and when we get to revisit it, now we can go in and flush out everything in greater detail.
Yeah.
Dang, I am legitimately worried now when we get to Stormblood, if all of us are going to just bite our own tongues.
Whoa.
Stormblood, best expansion.
I have a lot to defend on Stormblood, so I'm excited for us to get there.
Valid concern, but we will get there when we get there, for sure, 100%.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, so you get to the solar, you find out Tataro is either yapping or cheerleading, depending on how you want to interpret it, about you. Grand companies are here, sending representatives. They all want you to join their grand company. You have to join one of them, and I'll kind of pin it there for a second. But a couple other things happen here, which is, one, you get a Link Pearl, which if you've been noticing, you don't really talk to Minfilia directly when you're out in the field. Your Scion babysitter of choice up until this point, they've been the main liaison between you and orders from Minfilia, and they've been doing so via a Link Pearl, which you now have. And my best explanation of what a Link Pearl actually is it's a globally usable Bluetooth earpiece. That's basically what it is. Doesn't really matter where you are in the world.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I guess.
It's a fantasy phone. You got AirPods.
It's a fantasy
phone. They gave you AirPods.
Yeah, basically. New conversations open up for you inside of the Awakening Sands break room, as well as you've already come across this before, but completely understandable if you forgot that there is a remembrance service that is sort of happening behind the scenes. If you recall, back at level 15, when you're made an envoy, to tell the other Grand Company leaders about this remembrance service that's kind of, you know, being planned. Mm-hmm. So we're now here at the actual, at the cusp of the event itself. There are very weird rules around what order the remembrance service is going to happen.
I love it. Yeah, the Tataru actually has a funny line about that. Yeah, when you ask her, she makes like a meta joke, basically, because she's saying, oh, like, here's your itinerary. Like, this one's going to happen first, so you go here, and then you can go to the next one. Like, this is my recommendation. But then she says, I suggest, you know, following my itinerary, basically, but the schedule might change depending on your travel plans. So good luck, you know, which is basically her way of saying, like, you can go in any order that you choose, because the quest will then say, like, just attend the service in each city.
This quest, you do have to do all three in order to complete this quest, but Tataro does a little bit of tongue-in-cheek fourth wall winking and says you can kind of do it in any order, and the service will magically happen at wherever destination you go to next. So this service, right, it's basically the the in-game lore is that each of the three cities will hold a remembrance service for everyone who died during the calamity 5 years ago, and they all have their own flavor of doing that outside of the in-game reason. This actually serves as a more meta explanation as to what these cities sort of actually are. Now that you've sort of been tossed to and fro and bounced around between those cities, the game finally pauses and explains just what are they. And they do this through the form of the two twins, who are not named immediately, but as you go through the remembrance services, you will encounter these two twins. You have also seen them before. They're actually in the very, very opening cutscene with your character in it. They are either on the carriage ride with you, or if you started in Limsa Lominsa, they're on the boat ride with you. They're just sort of like... like too cool to talk to anyone, just sort of like closing their eyes, being all anime like.
Or they're just taking a nap.
I don't think they're taking a nap. I don't know. Those carriage rides look way too bumpy. Anyways, twins. One is a boy. One is a girl. Their names are Alphino, and he introduces his sister, Alice. And it's mostly through, I think, Alphino's mouth that we get a lot of exposition about the three cities. Yeah. This is also the beginning of another, I guess, like mini round of exposition drinking from a fire hose.
Fair
if you don't catch it all.
For sure. They all kind of follow the same format too, which you really start to notice after number two and then number three. It basically starts with the leader introduces themselves. And then the twins are like, look, it's the Blink City flag. The standard stands for these things. And then the leader talks about our city was born from 500 years ago when blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then they talk about 5 years ago, the calamity and Cartano. And then they go about now in the present, we struggle with these beastmen and these conflicts within our city. But we're all going to get through this. Yeah, believe. And that's basically the exact same format all three times. Literally, like, line by line.
What was that decision? That was a horrible decision. I felt
So I think this is actually where that decision to let the player have freedom on the cities they order or the cities they visit in whatever order they choose hurts the storytelling. Because imagine if they had just kind of railroaded you into sequentially following one after the other. Then they could have made the cutscenes a bit more unique. You know, had the twins say something a little different.
Maybe even
like some throwbacks. Yeah. But because they had to make it like work out of order, they had to follow the same template. And then that's why it just feels so repetitive. And, you know, it's a lot more boring, I think. Less dynamic. But I get like from a bias standpoint, this is helpful because no one city or one grand company is given like the upper hand, so to speak.
I would chalk up this like kind of split path decision as a net positive, even though there are definitely some strong L's. Yeah. So acknowledging that, kind of like what John said, when you make a split like this, where you let the player choose where to go, sometimes it can kind of feel like, oh, did this really need to, you know, happen? Couldn't you just railroad me? I think those thoughts naturally gravitate because I think our brains will immediately lock on to, oh, this is so boring. Like, it's very easy to see through this little template that they've drafted for each city. That being said, I feel like given that it is an MMO, it is kind of refreshing to have a little bit of agency in terms of what order to tackle this in, right? I generally do like it. It is clunky and, again, a product of its time, full acknowledging that this is a thing. And I'm pretty sure that there are other games, and listener, if you know them, please let us know, that do this kind of player agency choice, like choice matters and how that impacts the story. Like, there are better examples of them for sure, right? That being said, in context of Final Fantasy XIV, I think it's fine. If anything, in an early episode, I actually said, I want more of these kinds of things where, hey, it doesn't really matter what order you do them in. Just don't force it. Or rather, if it doesn't matter what order I do these tasks, let me choose what order to do them, kind of a thing. And I think this is definitely one of them. Granted, it's a very small, like, example, but it was kind of nice seeing three bullet points on my, you know, duty tracker and be like, oh, all right, then I guess I'll pick and choose which one I go to first.
Hmm.
If I could add one silver lining to this, from my perspective, new player, I really liked the variety.
There you go. See, James, the new player, says he likes it. I win.
I didn't pay attention to too much of the dialogue, but at this point, this was kind of a pivotal point in terms of my character RP.
Because,
I started off as like a delinquent, reluctant hero.
I remember.
But now it's like, okay, my deeds are being recognized, so let's kind of clean up my life and, you know, be an actual hero.
Get
and
ready
so
for I, the money.
The choice of which current grand company to choose was like so important to me at this point.
Because before this, your character would have gone to Ulda and been like, give me the money, right?
No, I was originally just going to do Gridania because that's where I started.
Ah, I see. Archer.
I see.
Oh, like this is cool. Like, oh, this is like my hometown, I guess. But yeah. Then after the Grand Company tour, and I saw the Queen of Uda.
Oh, no.
I was like, another Hall of Fell. I must serve my queen. Which is why I chose the Immortal
So
place.
You went to the dark side. You Lava Fells are all the same.
But also because like before I even played the game, like started up and I was building the character, I chose that this character would be from the desert. Give him yellow eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to be like this, you know, archer from the desert. Coming into like this lush green forest and falling in love with the city and like all that blah, 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 blah. And then upon like becoming a hero, you know, or hero in the making, so to speak, and then doing this Grand Company tour and then realizing like, oh, wait, I should serve my home country.
You can take the boy like out of the desert, but you can't take the desert out the boy.
Exactly.
I like that.
I do I have that. To say the Ulda cutscene has, in my opinion, the highlight of all three. Which is Nanamo perching, sitting on Ralban's arm like a parrot. It was absolutely hilarious. I remember the first time I saw that when I originally played through, just being like, what the heck is going on? And then now going back and watching it, still, what the heck is going on?
It's still ridiculous.
It has not changed. I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, this is like a cool, like Kenpachi kind of character. And then I found out, yo, this woman's a straight up the freaking sultan. This is like the main the queen. Dude.
I love it. I love the whimsy.
I need that to be added to the game for Lalafell players. So James can sit on my arm, you know, and I can carry him around like a mount.
Square Enix, please. When?
Square Enix, please. I'm begging you.
Oh. Square Enix, when?
However, this silver lining does turn into a lightning bolt that hits you. All three of these scenes are voice acted. They have voice lines. So in terms of it does help you kind of get through it without having to read all the text. And I know in last episode I said that I had zero context for voice acting and I didn't have a problem with it. But going back and rewatching these and like, you know, fresh off of last like episode 4 of our podcast here, I hear it now.
Mm-hmm.
The voice acting, it's bad.
Well, so I think specifically for these cutscenes, it's the crowd. That is really weird.
Yes. Yeah, the crowd noise is terrible.
They just shout out random lines and one by one, not even over each other, and there's no like background crowd noise.
Yeah,
it just like sounds like another. Yeah,
sounds like people everyone's are taking quiet turns to shout out things. Speaks up.
Yeah,
just I literally wrote on my like I made a note like one guy goes "Army Cutlass" during the Lipsa cutscene.
Didn't someone say "Think of the children" at one point?
Yes, my favorite is that one. Oh, in Gridania, there's a woman who goes, "We must think of the children."
No, I was like, no.
Am I watching a Simpsons episode? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, also, and Ulda, one guy goes like, I believe. So weird. So weird. Yeah, so that those cutscenes are just super awkward from a voice acting standpoint.
Hard.
Hard time.
Yeah. And hearing like Alphanode's sort of like, smug remarks, it like really okay. Listen, Sam Riegel, if you're listening to this podcast, know that one, I'm a big fan of Critical Role, but man, what were you thinking, buddy? Like, this was rough. It's like, oh, yes, freedom. Yes, they've always been rather fond of their freedom. And I'm like, that's not an exaggeration. That's what it sounds like.
Sound like
he
that.
Sounds like a Redditor. He sounds like
it makes
some,
you
like,
want to punch him.
Yeah, I hate this kid. I hate Alphino, and like Alizé isn't that bad. Like, she sounds like she sounds like she cares, you know? But like Alphino sounds so detached, and like
I'm pretty sure that was the direction that they were given, right? A lot of it comes down to
smug,
voice direction. Like, because a lot of the actors they hired for Realm Reborn are very good, and very talented.
Yeah.
But I think the voice direction was not as set as once they got to the later expansions.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they were like, I'll just make this guy like read your lines as annoying as possible, and so he did.
I do want to reiterate, partly to kind of cover our butts here, right, but also to reiterate, we don't have any qualms with any individual voice actor, but it's really what John says, like the direction that the actors were given were kind of, I think, all over the place and inconsistent with what's happening on screen.
I really like Merlewib, the admiral. I like her voice. It's pretty good, especially compared to the rest of the Realm Reborn cast.
Yeah.
Her voice and her VA did a good job. Yeah.
Rank your, I guess, most favorite to least favorite voice actings for the Grand Company leaders.
Oh, voice acting.
Ooh. Yeah. Voice acting. There we go. We'll keep it quick because I think we've already belabored this point quite a bit. I swear.
Yeah.
I think every episode we like slam the voice acting direction multiple times. Which again, very fun to do, right?
And beating a dead
it's
horse.
Endearing. It's
yeah, yeah. But
I think it's also because it's in contrast with what we know now.
Yeah.
That's true. It is very hard not to do that comparison game. But yeah.
I mean, really it's quick. Still infinitely better than like PS2 era. You know, I'm talking like Dynasty Warriors 3. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, I'll show you later. As someone who loved and grew up with that game, like going back and watching the voice acting is hilarious.
Final Fantasy.
It's so bad to the point that it's fun. Yeah.
We'll leave a link in the show notes to Dynasty Warriors 3. I'm sure I can ask John to pull up a video. Yeah.
Isn't there like a video game donkey video of like him like criticizing early game like voice acting?
Anyways. I think he has like a video on voice acting.
Yeah. Go look it up, listener.
Yeah, really quick. 1, 2, 3. Whose voice acting do you like the best and who's like the worst? And obviously,
okay, whoever's
left behind is number 2.
Okay, this is a hot take. I like Kana first. I like Kana.
Oh my gosh, you're so wrong.
Kani Senna, number 1. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Listen. I think it's maybe it's because that was like the first one I listened to. I actually really liked the tone of her speech, right? And so I liked the more like hopeful, it's somber, you know, talking about loss and talks about the effects of everything that's happened. And kind of like human, like sympathizes with the average commoner, right? Versus like Rauban is like, oh, hey, we go, it's me, Rauban. I'm a big hulking, like conquering or whatever, you know, like. That
just was like, money is only made out of conquest.
Yeah, I know, I'm a conqueror.
This is who we are. We rise, we fight and make money.
Here's my parrot, also the sultan of Uba.
Sorry, Kani Senna, Merle Whip, and then Rauban. Is that right?
Yes.
1, 2, 3?
Yes.
I am similar. I put Merle Whip at number 1. Kani at 2, and then, unfortunately, Rauban at 3.
Dude, imagine if you're, like, a freaking, like, dude whose, like, brother died in this freaking Umbral Calamity, and, like, he goes, like, oh, hey, with conquest and money, and he's like, that's cool, my brother's dead. You know, like, it's so annoying, you know?
I do think that Rauban and Merwib are more, like, propaganda-y, whereas Kani Sen is a bit more, like you said, like, somber and seems more sincere.
Yeah.
Anyways, sorry.
Interesting.
Don't want to.
Okay, James.
Going.
Yeah, James. What about you?
It has nothing to do with the voice acting quality.
Oh, I guess so.
No, too late. It's on the record. It's on the record. James, go.
You just off the cuff. It's Rauban first, just because. McQueen, Nanemo.
You're the parrot. Sure.
What is that? And then it's. I'm gonna actually put Kani Senna second, and then Merwib.
Merwib
is very flat.
But it matches her personality.
It's just that, like,
though?
Here is my speech, kind of robotic. You know.
Okay.
Interesting. Paul, how about you?
My quick 1, 2, 3 is Rauban, Merle Whip, Kani Senna.
All right. But listen here, buddy.
Wow, here we go. Here's the reason why. Vocal register. That's it. Their vocal registers land better in my ear in order of Rauban. And then Merle Whip, and then Kani Senna. I don't like
so
that airy, wispy, like, me. Like, they sound like Muppets to me.
As does Mentalia. So, I don't think, wait,
that,
none
that
of us had
like
the same
fairy,
ranking.
Elf.
Yeah. None of us had the same ranking, huh? That's actually
no,
crazy.
No, exactly. That's why, because I knew my ranking in my head, when I heard Jacob's and then John's, I was like, oh, okay.
Totally
I kind of like where this is going. But also, 4 wildly different criterias. None of them are on the merits of the voice acting itself.
Listen. I honestly actually thought Rauban's voice was grating and annoying more than anything. So it's because it's like affected because of like the tone of like the words that's coming out of his freaking pie hole sounds. It sucks. You know, it's like
so much hatred.
Listen, I was so mad. I was thinking about like, man, if I was in this situation and I survived this horrible calamity and like. All of my friends are dead, and this guy's coming up and saying, oh, but we got the Garleans, and now we're making money. I wouldn't care. I would be so pissed off, you know? Anyways, rant over.
You know, fun fact about Rauban's voice actor, though. He actually sang one of the songs for... He did the lead theme for Shadowbringers. So they brought him back not to do voice acting, but to actually perform, because he's a singer and a voice actor. He voiced Ralban in A Realm Reborn, and then later they're like, hey, we want you to sing this song for us.
Wait, apparently what?
He's done...
One brings shadow. One
yep, brings that's him. That's him. That's him. So that's Ralban's voice actor singing. And like, hence, you would never guess.
It's not the lack of talent. It really does come down to direction.
Jason Charles Miller is his name. Yeah. Yeah, so after you've gone to all three cities and seen each of their version of this templated ceremony and the twins' subsequent commentary / exposition, then you continue, and there's another cutscene that comes up where you'll see Alphanoe and Alize kind of debriefing in the quicksand at Ildaw.
Oh, and
they're
basically
talking about kind of what they just witnessed and kind of what they should do to ensure the future of Eorzea, and they end up going different ways, which is surprising, because you know, you've only really just been introduced to these characters, and already they're, you know, they're like, they look similar, they're dressed similar, they've been together, but then they're suddenly, you know, deciding to go different ways, and it's really, they want the same thing, but they differ on the methodology, you know, how they go about.
Yeah.
Alphanoe seems to want to work with the Grand Companies and the Scions, whereas Alize is like, they all suck. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm really paraphrasing here.
She goes, didn't you hear what they said? They're obviously not locked in on this let's save Eorzea mission.
Yeah, they're all like kind of like every man for themselves, essentially.
Right, exactly. So as a result, they end up going different ways. And there's actually, so little thing about Realmborn I like. There's actually a camera shot I really like that they do during this cutscene where Alphanoe's sitting and he's looking, I think, to the left. And then Alize's standing and she's looking to the right. And there's this contrast where their faces are looking in opposite directions, you know, and they're doing different things. You know, he's sitting, she's standing. And even their expressions are different. You know, Alize is kind of angry and then Alphanoe is just kind of chill. And I thought that was just a really cool way visually of communicating that, like, hey, they're going in different directions. And so, yeah, some nice cinematography. Is that cinematography?
No.
Like, some nice camera work from the team.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually did like that scene as well. The one thing that I will chalk this up as a very small paper cut is that kind of like how when you first meet the Scions inside of the Solar and you meet, you know, like Papalimo, Ida, and it get introduced to everyone all at the same time. Mm-hmm. It feels like an Avengers Assemble moment where like we talked about last time, it falls a little bit flat because you don't really get to know many of these characters. So you're really just kind of left wondering, like, who are you? Why do I need to care?
That's true.
Got a similar vibe here where clearly this is like a moment, but it's a moment that you're very, very distant from. Like, you are not part of these twins at all. You've only ever seen them at the very opening cutscene and actually in the background of... other cutscenes involving the first three dungeons. Mm. When you're talking with the different like Adventurers Guild, the proprietor, and then this is the next encounter you have with them. And so it the weight of it isn't really felt because, yeah, you just don't spend time with them.
Yeah,
it's a
good point.
But I do agree.
I don't think I remembered this cutscene, which means my first time playing through, I did not care. Right? And I'm only now in post, like watching this cutscene, like, oh, this is actually kind of interesting because I have hindsight.
I think that's the main thing. Yeah, it's you have no reason to care, but the game wants you to care for an arbitrary reason of care because I'm telling you to care.
Yeah.
And that in my mind is a big L. When the game is trying to force me to feel something that is undeserved. Like, you didn't earn my concern for these twins and their decision to split. Despite, I would agree with you, the good cinematography of it.
And also like the way they introduced, they're just so standoffish.
Yeah.
They're not likable.
And then suddenly you're supposed to care.
They are not likable.
They're not really likable.
That is your big problem. Yeah. Like Jacob was pointing out, the voice just makes you want to punch him.
So this long, long quest does conclude with that. And the twins part ways, and you report back to Minfilia saying that you attended all of the remembrance ceremonies. Something that I do want to point out, and mostly because we said we try to do this as a podcast for the listeners, and also I've come to really enjoy doing this, which is talking to the optional NPCs. So same. When you go back to the Waking Sands and head over to that break room, there are a couple NPCs that I just want to like quickly highlight. So one is there is the NPC Una Tayun. She said that she has amnesia, but then she swears that she's one of the Scions, which is kind of funny. And so I'm actually wondering, is this a 1.0 reference? Was she in fact one of the Scions? Oh, John's giving me a nod. I like it.
Yep.
And so she tells you now in this instance that she's been reunited with an old ally. At least she thinks he's an ally. Is a guy named Persevanes. So there's some progress on that end. You also have another trio of Ollie, Abatia, and Arenvald, where Ollie shares that Abatia has gone on a joint mission with the Immortal Flames, which sounds very similar to what you just came back from. If you recall, the lead up to the Ifrit fight was you were supposed to ambush the Amalja with Immortal Flames, and then you know you get ambushed on, and that leads into the Bowl of Embers. So Abatia has also gone on to some sort of joint mission.
Yeah, I was actually, I remember talking to Arnvald, and he's like, an experienced warrior, like, Ava won't die. You know, he's strong, he's fast. He'll come back safe.
I'm red
like,
flags.
Totally death red flagging flags your buddy here.
I've watched enough anime to know.
Yeah, that had to have been intentional. Of this, like, oh, dude, he's just stepping on every single landmine, death flag, red flag, everything. But yeah, like, there is progress in these dialogues. And again, like, you know, these small details, I think, really kind of help flesh out the world, like we mentioned before. But yeah. I did want to kind of give a nod on a update on what's going on with those other NPCs over yonder. Because again, you're never forced to talk to them. And it's really up to you to decide whether or not you want to talk to them. And then comes, I don't know, one of the most important yet somehow inconsequential decision points in the game, which is now that you've gone and seen what all three grand companies slash cities are like, which one do you choose? Because you have to choose one. I hated that playing the first time because I was like, oh my gosh, which one is the right one? Which one is canonical? Because I like playing games in a very canonical fashion.
Interesting.
So like, kind of don't, you can just choose whatever. And again, it is entirely inconsequential. It has no bearing on your playthrough. I will give that approval. There are a couple lines that change.
Yeah, but it's mostly like an Easter egg here and there.
Yeah, but it's mostly a reflection of what you choose. For example, let's say you choose the Immortal Flames, which I ended up choosing, in case you want to know. I ended up choosing the Immortal Flames. Okay. Yeah, so, you know, surprise, surprise. And later on, if you talk to other Immortal Flame members, sometimes they will refer to you as, like, one of them. You know, they'll refer to you by, like, private, you know,
cuckoo rank.
Yeah, whereas normally they would refer to you as just like, you know, hello, like adventurer, right? That's a more generic name. So that's the kind of flavor text that changes. But that's really it. So if you are someone like me, listener, and you just struggle with that, like, I don't know which one to choose. I mean, it's okay. Choose whichever kind of tickles your RP fantasy, maybe, like James.
And you can always switch.
Oh, yeah.
You can always switch.
The game they tell you during this cutscene that, like, hey, you know, if you want to change your mind in the future, you can totally switch. So,
but
you're
do
not
you really
stuck
want to be a character like that? That's so wishy washy. Are you of such weak conviction?
Listener, listener,
well,
it's me, Jacob, your best friend. Listener, it's okay. Don't do what I did. Don't look up the absolute best grand company to join and join Maelstrom. Listener.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's an hour and, like, don't spend an hour and 30 minutes like I did. Okay. Just really quick. Yeah. Do you like the colors?
This is a 10-second decision.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a little bit of, like, where it does matter. The glam changes for the items that you can buy from the grand company seal vendor.
I mean, let's be honest, guys. Maelstrom looks the best. All right, that's why I chose Maelstrom.
No,
Maelstrom
in addition to other reasons. They all look awful. Those colors are way too bright.
Whoa.
They look like...
Hold on. Like, I wanted to talk about this.
Okay.
You think they all look bright?
Hang on. Let's set the playing field, and then we can go ahead and duke it out as to how much... Okay, so...
Yes.
So before going deep into the things that actually do change based off of which grand company you choose... Again, you have three. it really doesn't matter. But again, one thing that changes is the glam color, like James mentioned. There is also a salute that is different based off of the different grand companies. They all salute differently. I believe the command actually is just slash salute, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
The command could be different. Is it? Is it slash salute?
I want to say it's something it's different, but yeah. I'm not 100%. Yeah.
They could be specific to the actual grand companies themselves.
I think they might be. I want to say it was like Storm Salute for Maelstrom or something like that. But I'm not 100%. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that does change. I guess we'll kind of jump forward a really quick second. Your mount barding is what it's called, can also change, right? But we'll get to the mount in a bit.
There's like associated titles, things you can acquire that will be representative of whatever grand company you're on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really the main thing, to be honest.
Yeah, it's mostly cosmetic.
Yeah, there is some functional choice where like there's some features that are locked behind the grand company and like their currency. So if there's a city that you go to the most, just for either maybe your job's located there or something, then it might make sense to go with that grand company so you can just do both in the same city. But it isn't like a big, you know, requirement.
Just do Maelstrom.
Yeah. The grand company salute is command is GC salute.
Oh,
there you go.
Just do Maelstrom.
Slash GC salute.
Your slash GC salute will change.
Here's the reason why you should do Maelstrom. One, the Aetherite Plaza is right next to the market board, which is very, very convenient. Two, that's it. I mean, honestly.
I was getting ready. I was like strapping in. I was getting ready for this list.
No, no. But then, okay. Okay. But the Maelstrom headquarters requires you to go from the main Aetherite to the aft castle, and then you got to walk.
Yeah, just a little bit.
It's the only grand company. It's the only grand company that requires you to take a second warp.
Oh, true.
But Twin Adder, you have to like walk all the way.
Twin Adder does have a long walk, but like James mentioned last time, the average distance from the main Aetherite to the Twin Adders versus to the Caroline Canopy, average distance, at least according to James, is the shortest.
Okay,
and these are two places you do frequent.
Doesn't Immortal Flames have isn't it like right next to the Aetherite there though?
No, so for the Immortal Flames, the Grand Company is like right next to the Aetherite Plaza, but to get to the inn.
The quicksand, you gotta warp.
It's a little you gotta warp.
Right.
Critania, you can walk to both from the main Aetherite. And then Limsa, it's one warp, but still one warp to go.
How often do you guys go to your Grand Company? How often do you guys go to your Grand Company? Let's be honest.
Pretty often.
Okay, you guys do now because you guys are crafters and stuff. But when you first played through the game, how often did you go to your Grand Company?
My past actions pay dividends today. That's the thing, right?
You can
my
always past change. Actions,
commitment issues. Don't be afraid.
You can always change. It's
don't leave your don't leave your brethren and sister in behind.
They've never done anything for me.
So I chose the Immortal Flames, both on Nonon Kukuin and on the second character that I'm playing, that I'm using to play through for the podcast. Part of it is just because I'm familiar with just those kinds of movements. It just takes one less mental barrier away. And also, if you choose the Immortal Flames as your reward, you get the Suit Black die for glam purposes. Glamours, we talked about a little bit before. You can sort of change your outfit, overlay another outfit's appearance on your current gear, and so you can keep a consistent appearance or whatnot. And as like a side note, would not recommend because you swap through gear so quickly, and then you know you're kind of strapped on gills, so you gotta buy these like glamour prisms in order to apply it. Whatever, we can have a whole separate discussion on it, and we will, I promise. But one of the other things you can do in terms of changing your aesthetics is you can dye them like a specific color. So Suit Black dye, that's SOOT. Very useful to me, at least. I choose a lot of gray, you know, color scheme. So a Suit Black dye ends up working out really nicely for me. So that's why I actually chose Immortal Flames. I would rather have that than the other dye colors. That being said, purchasing dye inconsequential, but yeah. I chose Immortal Flames, all to be said.
You made your decision based off of like 200 gils worth of dye?
It was one of many other factors. I'm actually trying to think why I chose Immortal Flames.
I'm disappointed.
This is the same Paul who like strategically figures out his Aetherite teleport so that he can save 400 gil. So I mean, I'm not like necessarily too shocked about this.
Paul, you said you chose based on like canonical story.
Yeah, the answer was there was none. Well, okay. There was none because it doesn't exist. Like, the game actively wants you to write your own story. Yeah. And so that kind of puts me, like, that kind of stops me in my tracks. At the time, I was playing as Monk. So I would imagine that's probably also a big reason why. Kind of like similar to what you said earlier, James, of pick one that's convenient. So, you know, I was Monk, soup black dye as opposed to other colors. Immortal Flames became natural.
Mm. Even Samurai starting city is Ulta.
Yeah, but that one's a little different in that your job quests kind of are all over the place, I think. Yeah,
It takes you all over the unlocked world. Hmm.
James, did you pick Twin Adder?
No, he's Immortal Flames.
I started as Immortal Flames.
Oh, okay.
And he switched.
I went Immortal Flames all the way to 90. I think somewhere in Endwalker I switched, and it was for glam reasons. But true also endgame. Because that's when I realized the warp to the Aetherite, Gridani Aetherite. It's like walking distance to the Grand Company and the Caroline Canopy. And also, I don't know if you guys realize, but our Free Company is aligned with the Twin Adder.
Well, that's just because I thought we could level up all three. So then I switched it from Maelstrom to Twin Adder. And then I realized you can't. Or like the other ones will go down. So I just left it. All right. So that's not anything strategic. Okay. Just keep that in mind.
It was an accident.
Okay. But what about you guys?
For me, clearly Maelstrom. It sounds like Jacob, you too, right?
Well, I was going to say, for me, my first character, Clayrich, he did pick Maelstrom, and that was literally because I Googled best Grand Company to join, and it said Maelstrom, and I was so freaking out. And John was like, oh, it's not that big of a deal, blah, 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 and I was like, shut up, John.
Your freak out is totally justified. It is a big moment. The game says, this is a big moment. Yeah. Who are you going to choose? Who are you going to team up with? Right? Like,
they all want you on their team.
Yeah,
exactly.
Not only that, it's like this like really crazy, like there's this like UI that shows up where all three of them show up, like the three options, and that the game has never done anything like that until this point. So you're like, oh my gosh, this is a very big decision. And so I'm like crashing out right now trying to figure out what decision to make. But yes, I did pick Maelstrom because I Googled what best Grand Company to join, and then that's what I did. But for my character, my second character, whose name shall not be named because it's hard to pronounce, he chose Twin Adders. And for me, the reason why I did that was because I was like, oh, if I was a character, if I was a hero, if I was an adventurer, I would align with Connie Senna more than anyone else. Because at the end of the day, Connie Senna made me feel like a human being. Like, she acknowledged the suffering that I went through versus like these other guys. It just felt like propaganda speech, you know?
So yours was in response to the remembrance services.
Yes. So because I did pay attention to the remembrance. I mean, I'm a lot more like I don't have a whip cracking behind my back. Actually, I do now for Dawn Trail because I'm so behind. But
y'all are exaggerating this whip cracking that
no, we're not. No, we're not.
We're really not.
John. You all but pulled out a physical whip and just like snapped it through the screen, telling us to get on with it.
No.
Oh, John, I want to do some glam. No, do the MSQ. No, do the MSQ. No. John, I want to explore these grand companies. No, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We are not exaggerating. This is an accurate historical retelling.
That seems a little exaggerative to me, but
John, this is a class I want to level. You don't need to level that class. You just play the characters right now.
Just stick to your one class. Get to max level. I do find it interesting that we all ended up picking different companies.
Ones. Yeah, it's like the ranking of the voice acting again. A lot of different opinions.
Quite interesting. And also for, I think, a pretty wide array of different reasons. So again, listener, if you are stuck on this, if you're just like freaking out, if you're crashing out like Jacob was, do try to let us convince you that it doesn't really matter in the big scheme of things. So, you know, by all means, pick an arbitrary decision to base it off of. Clearly, you've heard from us. They do sound all kind of arbitrary because they kind of are. And the good thing is the game lets you, you know, take it how you will. Do it for RP purposes, do it for clan purposes, do it for whatever. You know, maybe, you know, Connie Senna also moved you to join the Twin Adders. By all means, go ahead. But, you know, maybe it's okay.
You fell in it's love okay. with the uniforms, which, like, in real life, that happens maybe. Too. People join the Marines because oh, the uniform looks dope, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like the uniforms. I think all three suck.
There's a clear winner, and that's Maelstrom, because they actually have a bright color, whereas the other two, it's just like old blanket you tossed in the closet and then you forgot about, and now it's all dusty. Like that dull brown and dull yellow, just does not look good.
Here's why. I will try to find show notes to show them, but you can also look them up yourself. But here's why I say that all three suck. All three Grand Company uniforms just look like three different traffic cone colors.
That is not the direction I was expecting this to go.
They just look like three different kinds of traffic cones.
Wait, what traffic cones have you seen that are dark blue and brown?
That's why I said they're just three different traffic cone colors. Like the shape, I dislike the shape. They just look like a dusty blue traffic cone, a yellow traffic cone, and a red traffic cone.
I have seen. I've seen blue traffic cones.
I dislike them.
What? I've never seen a dark blue traffic cone.
But in any case, I dislike it. So the uniform had no real bearing on my decision.
Wow. I will say the hat is kind of. It looks kind of dumb in my opinion. That like flat top, not a fan.
Oh, but so switching Grand Companies is very. It's easy as just going and talking to the, whatever officer. Mm-hmm. But your rank does reset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a pain. Because it does
kind of lock you out of some of the materials that you can buy, but if you're not really into the crafting part or the glam chasing part of it, then that doesn't matter.
Also, let me, you know what? A small warning. Sorry, this is totally but just out of personal pain, I must warn you all. So there's this nice ticket, Aetherite ticket you can purchase once you get high enough rank that'll teleport you directly to the Grand Company headquarters, right? Really convenient. And I was like, oh, I have a brilliant idea. I'll buy like 300. Switch to another company and then buy 300 more, and I can go to all three cities. I'll do this for all three. I can go to all three cities whenever I want for free. I just use these grand company, you know, Aetherite tickets. I switched, and then I ranked up to get high enough to buy that, and then I found out, oh, you can only use the tickets for the company that you're currently assigned to.
Yeah,
so this was a big waste of time.
Yeah,
that was the dumbest thing, and that is why I will never go back to the Twin Adder. Because they wasted my time.
They waste your time?
Our free companies in Twin Adder. That could have been a very quick Google search.
You could have. Shut up. Shut up.
Okay, but yes, don't. Let us not repeat in John's past mistakes.
Yeah,
yes.
learn from
listener, this is us gently holding your hand and telling you it's going to be okay.
So, once you decide who to join, I know, you're just stuck in the solar. There's Minfilia behind you with her voice. There's three daunting decisions right in front of you. Once you do choose one, you embark on a quest, actually. It's not just click it and done. Although in-game, like in lore-wise, you do kind of click and tell them, hey, I want to join you. But then something happens which forces you to kind of embark on your first kind of trial, provisional, just like your very first immediate mission for that Grand Company. And I kind of like this one, but
yeah,
the TLDR version of this quest is there is a ship that has crash landed, and it will crash land in whatever region you choose your Grand Company. So if you choose to go with the Immortal Flames, then it'll crash land in Ulda, and Twin Adders, Gridania,
yep,
and obviously Maelstrom and Limsa Limensa. So you go to that crash site. It does not look like any ship that's Eorzean make. It is not Garlean, but there are Garlean soldiers attacking it. You go. There's a solo duty, which we'll get into a little bit. But the main reason why I like it is because you are introduced to Biggs and Wedge.
Yay.
Who are recurring Final Fantasy characters, starting from Final Fantasy IV, I think, is their first appearance.
I thought it was six. Was it not six?
Mm-mm. I actually looked this up. They came out in four. It's later revealed that the two like Baron soldiers that talk back to Cecil, but they kind of are kind of pushing back against Cecil's decision to defect. They spoiler are
alert
actually,
for FF4.
Minor spoiler alert of the first 5 minutes, yes, but they are retroactively named as Biggs and Wedge.
Oh, but are they called out in game as Biggs and Wedge?
They are retroactively named in the game, but at that point in time, they're not named. Yeah. They are a direct reference to Biggs and Wedge from Star Wars. And they've made many, many appearances in many, many Final Fantasy games. There'll be a link in the show notes. You can go ahead and take a look at all of the different appearances of Biggs and Wedge and all the different iterations. Again, lots of fun. I personally like these kinds of things. And
there's a Biggs and Wedge.
That's how
you
get introduced.
Yeah. Shout out to my favorite Biggs and Wedge in Final Fantasy VIII, my favorite Galbadian soldiers. They are hilarious.
They are usually a comic relief kind of appearance, side characters. They're usually, although not always, my first exposure was through Final Fantasy VII. And that's a very different Biggs and Wedge flavor than the Final Fantasy VIII. But most recently, they actually did appear in the Final Fantasy VII remake. And I believe, I do want to talk about this quest just a tad bit, but we can, you know, keep going.
Well, there's another FF reference, right, in this quest with the name of said airship.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, this quest is quite riddled with several small Easter eggs. So the ship that crash land is called the Tiny Bronco. Final Fantasy VII fans will, you know, giggle with glee. Like how I did.
I like that description.
Yeah,
I didn't giggle.
Yes. So
it flew over my head.
Hey, oh my gosh. Nice one. Very nice, James. I'm very proud.
The Tiny Bronco is in reference to Final Fantasy VII's ship. It is a tiny little airplane originally created by Cid. There's a whole little quest that goes with it. But in any case, it's a little nod. That airplane also crash lands into the ocean. Whereas here, the Tiny Bronco crash lands on land. But in any case, you go, you do a solo bolo duty, and the quick TLDR version of this one is nothing too special, really. Take out the weaker enemies, save the Imperial Decurion. He has a sword and shield. Save him for last, or else you'll probably lose. Similar to the Hycanth from the Amalja like solo duty. He serves, or he acts like a tank and DPS, so let the NPCs take care of him, take out all the adds, and you'll be fine. It's pretty straightforward, especially after...
In general, for these kinds of solo duties, you can kind of go by, like, prioritize the ranged DPS / healers. Anyone who's ranged, really, because they tend to be squishier and die quicker. And then go for, like, the tank, you know, the bigger guy who's on the front line. Usually that'll get you through most of them. And if you're really struggling, you can always just go and choose very easy when you restart the duty.
Absolutely not. So, I will never do that. I'm never going to do that.
The only thing you have to lose is your honor. You know, if you can embrace the shame, there's nothing wrong with going.
And my pride as a human being.
You know what? I would not lower the difficulty, but that's more of a me thing. But by all means, yeah, if you just don't want to deal with the hassle of it, by all means, do it. You have a life outside of Final Fantasy XIV. Do what you got to do, right? Don't stress, right? If you got to lower the difficulty, by all means. Again, you'll get no shame from us, but the game will try to shame you, right? But again, do what you got to do, right? It should be fun first and foremost.
The solo duties, they are designed for normal difficulty. So if you want the quote-unquote intended experience, then that might be one reason to stick to that. But otherwise, yeah, if you're just frustrated or you're wasting time, like, there's no real con of going back down. The other thing I did want to point out with this whole airship escapade is that there's a bit of lore in that, like, you know, you have these Garlean soldiers and they're talking about this guy named Cid who betrayed them and took their technology and gave it to these savages, you know? And so you can tell there's kind of this, like, superiority complex that these Garleans have, and also that the technology that the Garleans have is, you know, Magitek, and these airships isn't native to Eorzea. You know, this is something that's been brought to Eorzea by this guy named Cid, who you'll later learn has kind of been missing for a while, and then his understudies, which are Biggs and Wedge that you meet after you save them here. So it's an interesting piece of lore, and I think good to keep in mind because, you know, you'll be seeing a lot more of the Garleans and, you know, learning kind of how they view Eorzea.
you also finally get an actual name to this mysterious Garland. If you haven't, if this name doesn't sound familiar, this name comes up a couple times only from the mouth of our favorite lobster armor, Nero Tosqueva. He refers to this mysterious Garland, and we finally have a name, which is Cid, which is again another recurring Final Fantasy character name. We won't go too deep into this, but there are many, there have been many, many Cids across many, many Final Fantasy games. Yep. And like Biggs and Wedge, many different flavors of Cid. Sometimes Cid joins you in the party. Sometimes Cid is just an NPC. Sometimes Cid is a girl. Whatever.
Does Cid is an girl? Antagonist? That's like one time. And like people kind argue of. If that counts. Yeah.
It's like, it's, yeah, it's like a kind of thing. Again, listener, if you don't know what we're talking about, that one is Final Fantasy 15. We will link it in the show notes and you decide, is Cid actually a girl or is Cid the old man? But we'll just kind of leave it at there. Let the listeners decide.
Oh, I see. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I do have one other like little tip I'm remembering now. Like when you're doing a solo duty, just make sure your gear is like as up to date as you can.
Yes.
Because there was actually one solo duty at the end of ARR that I was doing where you guys were watching me doing it and it just kept failing over and over on normal difficulty. And I think it's like I would get so close, like maybe like 5-7% of finishing it out, but then I just couldn't. You know,
yeah.
And then someone, it might have been John, that you were just like, "Hey, what gear do you have?" And I didn't do like the job quest to get like the best gear.
Yes, I remember this.
And the moment I got it, oh my gosh, it like cut the playtime in half. So, yeah.
If you are still rocking the starting gear that you get, which is dependent on, I believe, what race you are, you might struggle with some of these solo bolos. But yeah,
tutorial gear.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. The brand new, I think, sets, they go pretty far.
Yeah.
So if you haven't, please get those. So you save Biggs and Wedge after the solo bolo solo duty. And that basically concludes your like intro to the Grand Company. Biggs and Wedge's rescue kind of gets used as a medium to sort of get you properly initiated in. And then normally you would just, you know, return back to the Waking Sands and go, you know, start your next MSQ. But I will recommend that you take this time to pick up your mount.
Yes.
Yes, Final Fantasy 14 does have mounts. You cannot ride mounts inside of a city, but generally if you're out in the wild, you can pull up your mount, you can ride it, you move faster, yada yada. But in order for you to unlock your mount, you first have to join a Grand Company, so the mount is locked behind that. Mm-hmm. And then a optional side quest will open up. The flavor of the quest will depend on which Grand Company you join. So if you join the Twin Adders, then you'll get the quest My Little Chocobo, and it'll be located in Twin Adders. If you join the Immortal Flames, that same quest, My Little Chocobo, will be in Ulda. Mm-hmm. And obviously, so on, same so for that third Forgettable City.
Although, one quick correction, though. You said optional. It is no longer optional. It used to be optional. It's no longer optional.
Oh, wow.
But you don't have to do it right away. I think it's before like you finish A Realm Reborn or at some point in level 50. You have to finish this to proceed with MSQ.
I'm sure there's some reason for it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In any case, yeah. This quest is really straightforward, but it is very easy to like do it wrong. Here, let me explain. So the quest is you just go talk to the NPC that gives you the My Little Chocobo quest. And then they will tell you, hey, in order for you to get a Chocobo, your first mount, you need to get a Chocobo Issuance. Mm-hmm. And you can purchase a Chocobo Issuance by paying what are called company seals.
Yep.
So each Grand Company has their own fancy currency called company seals. Again, Twin Adders have their own Twin Adder company seals. Immortal Flames have their own Immortal Flames company seals. And the third one, whatever, same thing. No one cares. So,
Maelstrom is the most important of the three. Don't you try to sneak in some bias to our listeners. How dare you,
You know what's
Paul?
Funny? This is the second time I made that joke, yep. And you completely missed the first one.
Well, I let it go the first time. I'm not letting it go this time. I also may or may not have not noticed, but no confirmation.
In any case, you need 200 company seals, and... If you were like anything like past Paul, you're going, oh, okay, so how do I get these company seals? You can get company seals by doing fates, which we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of time to do them. Maybe at a later point, perhaps if slash when we talk about relic weapons, we can go deeper into fates, what they are. But in any case, you might be thinking, oh, I need to go procure more of them. But if you have been paying attention to the quest reward for the previous quest, which is called the company you keep, that's where you choose your grand company, you will see that you have been rewarded already with 300 company seals.
Yep.
So you have everything you need to complete this quest. But if you just kind of like, just, you know, just go through the quest and not pay, you know, full focus attention to everything, you might miss the fact that you are already done with this quest effectively.
Fun story time, everyone. Buckle in your seatbelts. Back in my day, it used to cost 2,000 company seals.
Oh my god.
And here's the icing on the cake. You didn't get that initial 300 that you get now from doing the MSQ.
Oh my
so you would start at a whopping zero. So I had to go and grind 2,000 seals, which I did do right then and there, because I was like, I want my chocobo and I want it right now. And that was just a lot of fates, a lot of grand company leaves to get those seals. Yeah, which you now no longer have to do. So,
oh, it's 200 now.
Yeah. Oh, 200, yeah. Not 300. No, it's even less.
It costs 200. It costs 200 company seals to purchase a chocobo issuance.
But they give you 300.
They give MSQ. You 300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you all be grateful, because I had to walk to school in the snow and get 2,000 seals.
Uphill both ways.
Yep.
Purchasing your chocobo issuance is very, very straightforward. You do have it. You do need to go talk to the correct NPC. But I believe it is pretty straightforward. Nothing too crazy. I believe you talk to the Grand Company quartermaster for it. And you can, which basically functions like a little shop, like an exclusive shop just for the players who are part of that specific Grand Company. So it's there. You might need to click through the tabs for either the material or the materials tab, but it is there, available for purchase for 200 company seals. So all you gotta do is just buy that and, you know, continue that quest, go back to the NPC, and then you get a whistle for your troubles. So the way this works is every mount doesn't just come in full mount form. They usually come in some kind of like instrument. And so for this first one, it's a whistle. You just right click use, and then boom, you have your mount. But where did it go? The item just disappeared, you know, from your inventory. Gosh.
This is so true.
There is a separate menu specifically to use the action for mounting. So you find that under character, mount guide, and then you drag that to your hotbar, or you can just use the action right then and there. But I think we'd highly recommend you move that to your hotbar somewhere. And that is an action that you will use to summon up your mount. And finally, you get to use your mount.
But not in the area, not in the city.
But not in the city. You can only use it outside. I mean, the action itself is a little bit grayed out, so you can't even, you know, use it. And the game will stop you from, you know, suddenly summoning a chocobo out of nowhere inside of the middle of the city. But this interaction of you supposedly obtain a thing, but then what you really obtain is a usable item. And then you got to go to another menu to actually then use your thing.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah, there's like a pattern that this is just a thing. Do you want to just kind of, you know, put it on your radar, dear listener, that this is just a thing that this game does. So this is how you get your mount. You can use it.
There's also the crucial step of naming your chocobo.
Oh, yes, you're right. You must name your chocobo.
By the way,
what are your chocobo names, by the way? I'm just curious if we can all list ours.
Mine is Quellington.
That's a good one.
Mine was a Hey Hey.
From Hey. Moana.
The chicken from Moana.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, man. Yeah, I forget. I've changed it so many times, but I know right now it's Spicy Chicken Deluxe because he's red. He has red
Do you
feathers.
Always name your chocobos foods?
Not always, just more recently. I did have Sanders for Colonel Sanders before.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
please don't eat your chocobos.
Yeah. But John, also, you mentioned that your chocobo is red. Your standard chocobo is yellow, but you can change its color.
Very There's convoluted, no guide expensive to it. Process.
It's supposed to be like a trial and error thing where you put it in a stable and then feed it certain amounts of food, and it's supposed to like change the RGB values. But
that's really ridiculous.
Just look it up.
Yeah, it's
look up a guide on get the chocobo color you want. So
yeah, there's a website made by some poor yet generous soul who spent their time
in the show notes
calculating, you know, what fruit you need to feed your chocobo. It's just ridiculous. To get the color you want.
Yeah.
My chocobo name, I think it's Sharia or something. I looked up like the Arabic word for wings and I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And then I just changed it.
You put in a lot more effort than
I did. I don't think I'd put that much effort into my alt that I'm playing right now as we're doing like a play along. I think I named it like stupid chicken or something. Like I think I literally named it like dumb chicken. Without any spaces.
Why do you guys hate your mounts?
I don't hate your chocobos. I love spicy
you
chicken
deluxe. Food.
I love it.
Hey, you just heard me talk about my first one, and now I named it the Arabic word for wings, and then you hear me say, oh, this is dumb chicken, and then now you're like, why do you hate your mounts? It's just because I don't I don't often use my chocobo anyways.
I do end up using my chocobo quite frequently, only because, oh man, do you want to get into it? You can see, there are multiple mounts in the game. Okay, we're going to go really fast, okay? There are multiple mounts in the game. You can assign multiple mounts to one particular like action called Mount Roulette, and it like randomly choose from the ones that you favorited, and you can always have like a rotation of your favorite mounts.
Mm.
That's it. Nice. That is a thing.
Nice.
And then we're going to go right past that.
And then Chocobo is the only mount that you can change its glam. Sort of glam, I guess.
That's
put
true.
A costume on
That's
it.
True. They do have some pretty nice Choco Glam out there.
Yeah, those Bardings
are Choco Glam is called Barding.
Yep, I'm riding.
Some of them do look really cool.
The Cactar right now, which is amazing.
Was it Wild Ride? The Wild Ride Barding?
Yeah, Wild Ride Barding.
Okay, another thing that I wanted to talk about just real quick, since we're kind of talking about like not necessarily side quests, but side quests. There is an actual true optional dungeon that you unlock at level 20, which is Holly Tolly. The quest name is Hello Holly Tolly. You talk to...
Correction. It's Hello Holly Tolly. Gotta get that.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
It's not alliteration.
Yes, it's called Hollow Holly Tolly. You talk to Nedric Ironheart. By the way, Scion, didn't know that. I don't really remember him. He's right outside the Waking Hand.
Wait, he's a Scion?
Yeah, he says he's a Scion. I wrote this down. I wrote, who is also a Scion, parentheses, lol, I really don't remember him, end parentheses.
I just proved your point, yeah.
Yeah. This guy usually has a lot of these optional dungeons. I think he has like some hard dungeons that you can unlock to later on. It's like you just like teleport to a couple of Aetherites and then, you know, talk to a couple of people and that opens up the option to do the dungeon. I, from a sort of like gameplay perspective, I would highly recommend doing it. One, because... I think at this point you do get leveling roulette unlocked, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, if you're a DPS, if you're a DPS, you're going to have like 9 minute queue times, which is miserable. So just having another additional dungeon open up so that you can possibly get into that party, it helps a lot. You also... something I noticed as I was playing was because I very liberally teleport Aetherites as much as I can because I want to save as much time as possible, I'm often finding myself short for money. So it's nice that the end of that quest, it gives you a little bit of gear and some gil to sort of, you know, let you have bad spending habits like I do.
Yeah, definitely not a bad idea. You also get some marks on your Grand Company hunting log, which you should have unlocked after joining Grand Company that we just talked about. So also good reason. But again, it is optional. So you can totally just pick it up and then get back to it later. Since it's on the way to the Waking Sands, he's like right outside the Waking Sands. It's not at all out of your way to get it. So totally great, great recommendation, Jacob. And yeah, I think if you haven't gotten it already, feel free to grab it.
It's also a required dungeon for relic weapon farming.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Nope.
We're cutting that out.
No. We will not.
We will once again recommend not open up
pain
that kind of worms
to our listeners. We want them to have fun.
I'm just waiting for that episode.
That relic weapon episode. Oh my gosh.
Okay, so listener, we're gonna briefly touch on just what this is, just so you know why we're trying to avoid this topic.
Oh,
okay.
No. Have we mentioned it before?
We did multiple times now.
We talked about it, yeah.
We did, and this is, I think, the second time where we're like, we're not going to touch that. But James is quite relentless. And so now I feel like he sort of forced my hand to at least acknowledge this and explain why we're not going to talk about it.
Scratch that itch for me, Paul.
Oh, man.
I will, again, try to keep it brief. When you complete all of A Realm Reborn, because I believe that is a prerequisite, you can unlock this whole side set of things called Relic Weapons. Relic Weapons is a general term for a lot of different kinds of weapons, but each set of Relic Weapons is tied to a specific expansion. So A Realm Reborn has a Relic Weapon set called Zodiac Weapons. If you're getting giddy because you know what this means, I promise you it's nowhere near as fun. Okay? It's slightly less fun than the original Final Fantasy XII Zodiac Spear. Okay? That's just, if you know, you know. Okay?
If you know, you know.
Link in the show notes. So it requires a lot of time investment, energy investment, mental investment to quote-unquote max out your Relic Weapon. James loves this. I swear, I think there are days when he wakes up for this grind. It is a hardcore grind. It is purely designed to keep you playing the game once you've done everything else that you could possibly do for the current expansion. That is what it is. There's a lot that goes into it. Yeah. I myself have done a couple. James clearly has done basically all of them as far as I know. It's a lot to talk about, and we will dedicate.
Wait, yeah.
We will dedicate a whole episode for it, I promise.
I've played this game for, how long has it been? I think like 7 years now. I've never done a single Relic Weapon. Actually, that's a lie. I've done one crafting Relic Weapon, but otherwise I have done zero. I've never completed a Relic Weapon. So totally not
needed. But you've done the Endwalker one, technically.
We haven't even unlocked it yet, right? Like, so we're still way back here at MSK level 20.
Yeah.
This is after you complete MSK level 50 to even think about it. But it is a lot of work, and we will get to it. Okay, you know what? I promise we will get to it, but not at MSK level 20.
And all that to say, just unlock Halitali for now.
Yeah, just do unlock Halitali. Just do it, not for your Relic Weapon. Extra just because,
EXP, extra chance for the queue to pop faster.
Yeah.
But more importantly than that, for Relic Weapon.
But yes, go ahead, unlock Halitali. Because you need to go to the Waking Sands anyways for the next quest, which is for Coin and Country. You get your next, you know, line of prey return to Waking Sands. A couple other optional NPC dialogues have progressed. One of which is you get another one of those merchant brothers. What I mean by that is at the very beginning of the quest, you know, you're either on a carriage or on a boat, and alongside yourself, Alphano and Alizé, there is the carriage driver. Or I think if you're on the Limsa Limitsa boat, he's just another merchant who's along for the ride.
Oh, is that the case?
I believe so. Uh-huh. One of his brothers apparently is a vendor for the Scions, and then you will actually see them continually miss each other as they run their deliveries. So that is the thing to keep an eye out for future optional conversation talk. And you get Liavine, who appears, and it seems that she has joined the Scions. Now, this name, if you've been listening to our podcast, should sound a little bit familiar because she was part of that party that completely blew up with Edda, Avir, and Pyoreo. Edda failed to save her, you know, betrothed Avir. Avir, who may or may not have dashed headfirst as a tank into a mob and broke line of sight with said healer and, you know, died.
Sounds familiar.
Maybe.
Sounds
maybe.
Like John Special, but actually.
Liavine, in Tamtara Deepcroft, nonetheless.
Yes, but Liavine and Pyoreo were the other two that padded out this party, and Liavine has actually joined the Scions, kind of like you.
Yeah, except she kind of seems like she's in a downer, because when you talk to her about it, she says, like, you know, oh, others join because they're like, you know, they for like the cause, or like, you know, they're fighting for something. And she's like, I joined because I have nothing. It's like,
nowhere to go, nothing to do. Which then kind of makes you think about, like, why, who's allowed? Who gets invited? Like, wasn't this a...
Yeah, it really did feel like an exclusive club for us.
Yeah, but it seems like we're just picking up adventurers like they're stray cats.
I feel like for us, it was more of an invitation to the A team, you know?
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yes, there is a B, you know what? Okay, I like
a
that.
C team.
Yeah, she's like...
They're probably recruiting their own members.
Yeah, all these optional NPCs, yeah, they are the what we lovingly call the B squad. Because, you know, they're just not in any cutscene. But yeah, so you return, and then this is where actually... Menophilia sort of properly introduces you to Biggs and Wedge. They are from the Garland Ironworks, who are allies of the Scions of the Seventh Dawn. A little bit of, you know, lore building, world building here. And then I think the TLDR of the rest of that conversation is just Menophilia loves Eorzea. That's just that's really just what it is. And so, like, you know, yippee.
So yeah, at this point, you've joined a variety of organizations. And it's funny because if you actually talk to some of the Scions after the cutscene, specifically Ida, she'll say, let me see if I have this right. You're an adventurer who's a Scion and a Storm or, you know, whatever GC you joined, Grand Company. And then she says, golly, how do you keep track of everything? And it's like, yeah, already at level 20, story-wise, you've progressed so much. You know, like we said before, you went from zero to hero, and now you're even joining this Grand Company. So it feels like there's a lot, nice sense of progression that's been going on so far. And, you know, you'll see when we pick up next time kind of how that keeps continuing and what new adventures are in store.
That's our show. If you like this episode, consider subscribing to our podcast. If you really like this episode, let us know with a review as well. Thanks for listening to the Secret Chocobo Club, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.